Good morning. Today I like to give a presentation on a new operational tool for mapping root zone soil water content and total available water that can be found and used within Google Earth Engine, and it is called Evaporation Flux. It's available now, it's still under development, but I feel that this tool potentially can be a big game changer, transformative in how we do soil hydrology in the future. I recognize my co-authors, Bruce Harrison and Rick Allen and Isaac Killick, members of the Landsat Science team, and of course our MS graduate students, David Ketchum, Gabriel Parrish, and Peter Revel. First, I shortly will mention the importance of root zone soil moisture and total available water, then talk how we can map root zone soil moisture, how we can map TAW, and then where Google Earth Engine evaporation flux comes in the picture and what future research needs are in order to start using this new tool in the most efficient way possible. We need root zone soil moisture maps because in the semi-arid regions of the world, the soil moisture regime is an important factor, probably the most important factor for the development of different soil types. And so if we know the root zone soil moisture regime at a high spatial resolution, 30 meters with Landsat, we probably can greatly improve the soil maps of the non-agricultural areas. Also, for the initialization and assimilation of hydrologic models, we need to know the water content in the root zone. Why would we use optical thermal remote sensing imagery, Landsat, MODIS, for root zone soil moisture? Quite a few talks this morning dealt with using microwave imagery in order to determine soil moisture. But we should be aware that microwave imagery only is measuring soil moisture in the top 5, although we have seen it's not even the top 5, the top 2 centimeters of the soil surface, whereas optical thermal imagery will capture root zone soil moisture all the way through the root zone, whether it is 20 centimeters deep or 12 meters. Then, of course, soil moisture is very variable in space and time, and really remote sensing is the only cost-effective way to study it and to map it. How do we map root zone soil moisture? And we have been doing this already for more than 10 years. We start out with a Landsat image that contains six bands with reflectance values in the visible light, the near-infrared and the mid-infrared, plus one thermal band, long-wave infrared, which is the emission of electromagnetic radiation from the Earth's surface. Then we use two algorithms, CBAL and METREC, that really are very good algorithms for the prediction of the actual evapotranspiration with a spatial resolution of 30 meters. I give some references through my talk so that if you have a bigger interest in this, you can download the talk, and these references are given at the last slide. The issue with CBAL and METREC is that they take some time to run, but they are also very expensive in the sense that you really need to be very well educated in micrometeorology in order to use these algorithms yourself and come up with a high-quality product. Is a very steep learning curve, and my feeling is that CBAL and METREC have been underused, especially because of the steep learning curve. It just is too big of an investment in time to learn how to use these algorithms. But if you spend that time, as I have done, it took me about 10 years, then you really get nice values of the components of the energy balance, the net radiation, the soil heat flux, the central heat, and the latent heat. You can use that then to calculate a relative ET over an entire area, which is called the evaporative fraction. And then the evaporative fraction can be related to the relative Roussan soil moisture condition as in the way as has been described by Scott and Ollie. I consider this a semi-empirical relationship, but very valid. So what do we do? And this is an example of the Middle Rio Grande Valley in New Mexico. So here to the top right corner is Albuquerque, and the Rio Grande Valley goes in a diagonal to the lower left corner. So we can use this metric to calculate the latent heat flux. We also have the sensible heat flux. Then we calculate the evaporative fraction, and we convert it to root zone soil moisture. And what we see is along the Rio Grande, there is a lot of high root zone, also on the irrigated fields. Also in the city of Albuquerque, we see quite some wetness in the parks, in the gardens that are all irrigated. And then in the surrounding desert, it is all white. There is a very low root zone soil moisture. This is one of several validations that have appeared in the literature. What we have here on the horizontal axis is the ground measured water content in the root zone, and on the vertical axis we have the Landsat observed water content in the root zone using the technique that I just showed you. And what we see is a really good correspondence. This validation graph is very relevant, I think, because the triangles on the top and the blue diamonds come from irrigated fields in Pakistan. Then the green squares and the yellow diamonds, let me see, yeah, those are from irrigated fields in Mexico, a completely different place on the world. And then the blue circles is a validation that we did ourselves in the deserts surrounding Socorro, New Mexico. We see a pretty good agreement, and this comes back over and over again. This method really works. Now let's look about total available water mapping, TAW. How can we do that? And why would we even think about doing that? Well, TAW, I consider it the least known parameter in soil water balance models. And we need this parameter in order to calculate the actual evapotranspiration with our models, because we know that the relative ET at the pixel is closely related to the relative root zone soil moisture content. The climatologists in the 40s and 50s already used this relationship, and the expression by Scott and Ollie is just another expression, but very similar to what has been used by Budico and other climatologists in the past. And what we also observe is that the traditional way to quantify the TAW can often fail. We quantify that TAW is equal to the difference between field capacity water content and wilting point water content times the depth of the root zone. Well, the matter of fact is that we don't know field capacity, we don't know wilting point, nor do we know the depth of the root zone. So we really need to do something different. Look to this picture here, for example, in the mountains in Nevada. We have this very shallow soil layer that we could obtain information about using the StatsGo data set, but the roots are way deeper than the depth of the soil, and so we cannot get a good TAW for these kinds of conditions, as for many other conditions, because of uncertainty how deep the roots are growing and taking up their water. Yet we need reliable TAW maps in order to interpolate between two root zone soil moisture images that we have on an image day. We have an image day the 1st of July, and let's say the middle of August. What are we going to do in between? We only can make that interpolation by having a TAW map, because TAW is a constant property in time for each pixel. Even more importantly, we need a TAW map to extrapolate our simulations into the future. if we want to study the effect of climate change on the soil water regime, only if we have a reliable estimate of TEW, we can do that. And I refer to a publication of this year by me and 10 other co-authors where we discuss many of the issues that are important to get a good TEW map. So if we look at the relationship between TAW and the relative soil moisture condition in the root zone, we see that a large TAW will lead to a higher relative ET because the water is available to do so. Also, if we have a large TAW, we will have less deep drainage below the root zone, whereas a small TAW will enhance groundwater recharge. Groundwater recharge is the major focus of my research in New Mexico. Thus, under water-limited conditions, a negative correlation exists between TAW of a pixel and the number of days with water-stressed vegetation between two precipitation events. And so we feel already in a qualitative way that if you look at the number of root zone soil moisture images, we are already learning about what the TAW is of a pixel. And so what we are going to do then is we will calibrate and find the best value of TAW for a given pixel using a series of root zone soil moisture observations. We have Landsat imagery since 1984, more than 30 years now, and certainly in the western U.S. we have plenty of images that allow us to make reliable root zone soil moisture maps of all the areas of interest in the western U.S. And so what we can do then, we can take any hydrological model and simulate a number of root zone soil moisture values as simulated using different estimates of TAW. So for each pixel on the image day, we get different estimates of as simulated depending on what TAW we put into this hydrological model. Also, we can use any validated ET algorithm. I use Siebel and Metric, but there are other algorithms that are reliable that can observe root zone soil moisture values on the image day. We call that S observed for a given pixel. And then the TAW estimate that minimizes the difference between S simulated minus S observed, that represents the optimal calibrated TAW value for that pixel, and we can leave that in place and then run simulations between image days into the future or backwards into history. We have used two different ways to calibrate TAW. On the left is where we used an entire image. That was a quick way of doing the calibration, but I think it is not too robust. And therefore, now with my graduate students, we are looking at a pixel-by-pixel calibration. And these are fake data. But the idea is that on the horizontal axis, we have the observed root zone soil moisture by the Landsat image. On the vertical image, we have the simulated root zone soil moisture. And then the three lines express what happens if we use different initial estimates for TAW. The yellow is 225 millimeter, the red is 150 millimeter, and the green is 75 millimeter. And then the result that gives us the closest agreement with the one-on-one line, in this case the red one, that then represents the calibrated optimal TAW. So where does Google Earth come in? Google Earth comes in the mapping of the root zone soil moisture. Instead of having to struggle for years to learn how to run Metric and Siebel, EEFLUX allows you to go in Google Earth. Very quickly, Google Earth will calculate for any Landsat image the ET, so you have it immediately, and you will need much less training than what you would need to run Metric. Google Earth, you can enter at that URL. There is a big team that works on EEFLUX. Isaac Killick and Rick Allen are part of this team. why an evapotranspiration tune or Google Earth engine? There are many reasons. One important reason is it has enormous computing and storage power. You cannot be that anywhere else. And also, EE Flux hold the entire Landsat archive and the North America land data assimilation system of gridded weather data. These are the data resources used by EE Flux. And here you have an example of an ET map in Arizona. This is the Phoenix area there in the middle that you can download and then start. And you can also download sensible heat flux, calculate the evaporative heat flux, and convert this map into a soil moisture root zone. Next steps are in Google Earth. It only works for flat area at this moment. The mountain implementation people are working on. Cloud detection is important. And there will be a user console where the user can adjust the result. Research needs, we need to do a quality assessment of the EE flux energy balance fluxes. Further development of calibration approach for TAW, the validation of TAW maps, and then developments of how we can use TAW maps for soil survey of non-agricultural land. Thank you very much.
Quick question for Jan.
Wow.
So, thanks, Jan. And thanks for attending. We will have, five minutes break. So we will start again about 10, the remote sensing symposium.